Oh,
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Glory Glory My Night podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kyle Quinn, and join me today to talk about that enthralling victory over Liverpool at Old Trafford in the FA Cup is Phil De Bruyne from beyond the pitch. How's it going, Phil?
doing good, mate. Doing good. Didn't have quite a makeup ready here before you press record. You need to count me in.
So, as everybody probably knows by now, I was in the Stratford End for that match, and I couldn't have picked a better game to go to. I was at the Brighton game earlier in the season, and that was fairly miserable. Probably the worst game in the season that you could go to would have been Bournemouth, but that I went to at the weekend was probably the best possible game you could go to as a United fan. It's arguably the best FA Cup tie of the 21st century. It had just about everything. So many twists and turns. It was a real roller coaster ride as a United fan. I think when we were 2-1 down and 3-2 down, I was resigned to the fact that we were going to lose. But we came back to win 4-3, and we had a young player scoring the winner, his first domestic goal for Manchester United, and then, absolutely ridiculously sent off for taking his shirt off. But that just was unbelievable game of football, and to beat Liverpool in that manner, you couldn't have scripted it better, Phil. How did you feel about
Well, first of all, man, I'm going to add you on a few things. You were resigned to losing before you went over. it's talk about some of our WhatsApp messages prior to the game, full of optimism as usual, Mr. Quinn. Nah, listen, it was brilliant. It was a fantastic game, and there was parts of that second half where I was not particularly happy, because let's be honest, first 30 minutes United were exceptional. Probably the best United I've seen all season. They had intensity, they were winning the ball back. They should have been 2-0 up. Scott McTominay had a great chance to put 2-0 up. Salah had a decent chance, to be fair, too. They put across Onana. But Liverpool are one of the best teams in the world. City are the best team in the world. Liverpool played them about a week ago and should have beat them. So there isn't many teams that are beating Liverpool this season. But one thing that I've always asked of United players at the end of any game, whether it's against City or Liverpool, is look, it's okay to lose, but just be able to look us in the eye after the game and give everything. And they pulled an equaliser out of nowhere with Antony, much maligned player. He scored with his right foot. You want to ingratiate yourself to United fans, score against Liverpool, a key goal. He did, got United the extra time. They go 3-2 down again and still find the character to come back. And look, Ten Hag gambled a lot in that game and it paid off.
He did. I mean, United finished the game with just two defenders on the pitch and about five forwards. He went for it. He was brave, and he got a reward.
Sorry, mate.
He got his reward for his bravery with the substitutions. Now, in the past, his substitutions have been called into question, and lack thereof at times, or taking too long to make subs. But he made a number of attacking subs in that game, and it paid off. Obviously, it doesn't matter now because we won. But when he took Kobbie Mainoo off, it bemused everyone around me.
Sure.
Everyone was angry about that one. Not sure why he did that, but it didn't matter in the end. I actually thought Eriksen was quite good when he came on as well. I think all the subs really did well that came onto the pitch, including Harry Maguire. But yeah, it was a bit strange taking Mainoo off, but he obviously knew what he was doing. By the way,
Sure.
we when I'm on that topic, I just want to mention how good was Kobbie Mainoo in that game. It was
But look,
unbelievable, wasn't he?
here's the thing about this. Ten Hag deserves a lot of credit for the likes of many people at the football club. Obviously, they developed him. But there aren't many managers that start 18-year-olds in the middle of the park. You can start 18-year-olds at right back, left back, right wing, left wing, but the middle of the park is where games are won. And I remember when United signed Phil Jones, they really signed him as a central defender, but they played him at right back because they didn't trust him in the middle yet. The quality you have to have to play in the middle of the park is unbelievable. I mean, Casemiro finds it difficult in the middle of the park because the game is so quick and so intense. Mainoo is exceptional. I mean, most of what he has, you can't coach. You know, there's no way a coach can teach you pass selection, can teach you composure, can teach you, you know, maturity, all these things. His technique is flawless. He's a brilliant kid. And United have been criticized heavily over the years, deservedly so. But one thing they consistently get right is the academy. You look at the goal scorers against Liverpool, you know, Scott McTominay, Marcus Rashford, Anthony obviously was a big, big signing. Ahmad, when he was bought, was put in United's academy, so he still had to make that jump to get in the first team. Alejandro Garnacho, you know, was at 26 starts in a row, simply sensational. And one of the things that doesn't get talked about enough is in that, first of all, Garnacho makes the first goal. He's always shows up in these big games. You know, he showed up against City at Old Trafford when United beat them last season. He made the goal for Rashford. He was probably United's best player in the cup final when he came on for Sancho. He should have had a penalty that Eddie had 2-3 weeks ago. And again, against Liverpool, look at what he did against Arsenal away. The dribbling, like he kept that ball so close to his feet, running at full pelt. So easy to overhit that ball, to overrun it, to give the advantage to Bradley. He controls the ball, control at pace, picks the pass. Ahmad left footed goes across him, bang, in the corner. Ahmad hits with his left foot in the corner. That was an exceptional, exceptional goal. And, you know, Ten Hag deserves a lot of credit because, you know, he's had to play young kids. And if you know, Kobbie Mainoo is everything I want a Paul Pogba to be.
Yeah, it's actually amazing that Liverpool, from an attacking corner, then allowed a 2v1 situation for mm-hmm. United.
Mm-hmm. That's really brilliant. I mean, that Klopp wasn't criticised enough on that.
Yeah, and the composure that Ahmad showed in that situation for such a young kid who's mm-hmm. most of his experience as a footballer has been at Sunderland. And he's one-on-one with the goalkeeper and he puts it away. And he still had Bradley in the situation as well. There's a few United players that I wouldn't have backed to score that one-on-one. So against Liverpool in the FA Cup, you know, one of the most important game of the season, 121st minute, and he puts it away. That shows not only great ability, but also a great mentality from the young player. And it may be the catalyst that will kickstart his Manchester United career. This is what we've been waiting on. We've been complaining that he hasn't really been getting, you know, much of a chance. He's been injured a lot this season as well. But this is the moment where he announced himself when on the world stage. I mean, 8.6 million people in the UK alone were watching this game live, I believe. And then obviously he's been around the world. So Ahmad will take the headlines, and rightfully so. But
I'm going to tell you something on that. On Sunday, I got lots of texts on Sunday from Americans who really aren't what they would call soccer fans, or football fans. Their kids play football, so they're starting to watch it a bit. And the amount of people that text me said, that's the best game they've ever seen. That was incredible. That's what United Liverpool should be. And Ten Hag's record against Klopp is now 2 wins, a draw, 1 defeat, the 1 defeat being the 7-0 last season, which was excruciating. And when you think about something, the way Jurgen Klopp treated that journalist, right? Think about how hard it would have been for Ten Hag to face the journalist last season after losing 7-0 on Anfield. It would have been excruciating. And I know they have to do a lot of interviews. I know it's overkill. I know some of the questions are mundane. But one of the reasons why you have to do a lot of interviews is because clubs take an enormous amount of money from these broadcasters. So the dividend is Klopp can put players on the pitch, you know, that like Virgil van Dijk, you know, can put top players on the pitch that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to keep Mo Salah and all that through these broadcasting contracts. He's done that so many times that it's so disrespectful, and he shouldn't keep getting away with it because, you know, he's obviously a top football manager, but that is really classless. And, you know, to me, He went 2-footed on United after the 0-0 game at Anfield. And I thought that was really classless. I mean, there's parts of Klopp that I do like, but I just thought I was disappointed. Like he should be caught. He should be facing some type of disciplinary measure for that.
I mean, he didn't face disciplinary action after Jota scored that late goal against Tottenham, and he celebrated in the fourth official's face.
I know. It's not right. And you know, to me, United have played Liverpool twice now, and Dalot and Amar have been sent off for absolutely nothing. And for some reason, these disciplinary measures don't apply to Klopp. You know, and I haven't seen another player sent off for what Dalot was sent off for again all season.
Yeah, I would say he's arguably been the best manager in the Premier League in the last, you know, 7 or 8 years.
He's definitely up there.
But I have to be honest and say he's a complete prick, because some of his behaviour, especially towards journalists, is just bang out of order. And it's usually fairly innocuous questions, routine questions, and he loses the plot.
Fergie was a prick. Okay. Lots of top managers are pricks. That's okay. But Fergie was rightly called out on it when he was a prick. Okay. Being a great manager doesn't give you that pass. And to me, you know, 2 weeks ago, the Manchester Evening News, a week ago, wrote an article criticizing Alejandro Garnacho's reaction to being given a penalty. For some reason, it hasn't provoked their opprobrium enough that they should say something about Jurgen Klopp. You know, I mean, to me, that was utterly absurd. By the way, the same journalist this week has been praising Garnacho, his maturity and everything else. I'm like, this is unbelievable. I mean, but yeah, it's always United or police to a higher level.
Yeah, George Smith, I think that's who you're talking about. I noticed that he was on the MAN's podcast on Monday, so I didn't even bother listening to it because I don't really care what he has to say anymore.
Well, I mean, look, we can all be wrong, right? We can all write something stupid. It doesn't defend him for me, but I would hope he learned from it.
Yeah, he definitely needs to learn from that. It was an absurd article dedicated to Garnacho celebrating winning a penalty. And what's wrong with that? You know, he was. It bemused me how, you know, I'm a journalist who covers Man United for 11, and wrote an entire article criticizing Garnacho for celebrating winning the penalty. I just couldn't believe it. But yeah, just coming back to eulogizing about Manu for a second. Now he did this so many times throughout the game, but there's one particular, you know, bit of skill that's been shared online many times now, including from the official club accounts, where he goes past Szoboszlai, I think his name is Endo, and Van Dijk, all in one move. He just takes them all out and sets Rashford through. That is just amazing feat. Just the footwork that he has is unbelievable. And it's, you know, he's not nowhere near his peak yet. I mean, he's still only 18. So imagine how good he's going to be when he gets better, or gets older. Sorry. Now Gareth Southgate, before the weekend, didn't think he was good enough to get in the England squad at the moment, and he was put into the under-21s, but clearly after watching that game he changed his mind and has now picked him for England. They need to get him capped as soon as possible because they don't want him going off to Ghana.
Well, these are friendly, so these won't count as far as official games, but
yes, oh, that's right, yeah,
he has to with the Euros right around the corner, if he's not thinking about Kobbie Mainoo, there's something seriously wrong. And, with Gareth Southgate, if they go to the Euros and they don't win it or they get knocked out, leaving the likes of Manu out is going to really come back to haunt them. You know, for me, Jordan Henderson, you know, shouldn't be in that team ahead of Kobbie Mainoo. I know they're different players. Personally, I would have preferred to see Manu rested for 2 weeks. But, you know, you look at someone like Miley at Newcastle, fantastic young player, 17, you know, not being mentioned yet really for England. But Manu is meteoric rise. I mean, you talk about the injuries that have really affected Ten Hag this season, and maybe there's no more than Kobbie Mainoo. I mean, he's so transformative. Ten Hag has lost his most transformative players that make such an obvious difference when they play. Luke Shaw, Lisandro Martinez. Massive difference. When Shaw was fit for a month, United were playing really, really well. He was scoring goals. Rashford was found his form. Completely different football team. Completely different football team with Lisandro Martinez. Completely different football team with Rasmus Højlund fit. Right? Completely different football team with Kobbie Mainoo. If you want to pick four or five players you don't want to lose in a season, those are the ones you pick. And I think, like, Ten Hag, we talk about his future. He's in a semi-final, close to another final. I'm expecting it to be Coventry. So in 2 years, let's say he's won a League Cup, finished third. This would be United's second FA Cup final in a row. I think that's a more than reasonable return considering what he inherited. Yes, you can pick holes in him, but I'm thinking, okay, what if United hadn't hired Ten Hag? What other managers coming in and doing better than that? I mean, it's hard to see, Ken.
Yeah, that's true. But if we get to the final, which we obviously expect to, given that we're playing a championship team in the semis, we desperately, desperately want to win it this time.
But look, United are not a better team in City, and they won't be a better team in City by the time the cup final comes around, no matter what.
I'm not saying this as a, you know, a critique of Ten Hag. I'm just saying, as a fan, I really want to win this game.
Of course, we all do. But Coventry want to win it too. But they're faced with the same reality, is that they're not better than the teams that are in it. United against City in a cup final, they can beat them. You know, they last season, they start terribly, concede a stupid goal. They go 2-1 down, conceding the same goal again. They hit the bar in the last minute. They've got Wout Weghorst up front. I mean, the gap in quality is really big. And yeah. That gap in quality will still be there this summer. I mean, this cup final, whether it's United and City. And I just think, like, we have to be realistic about that. You know, Ten Hag can't close the quality gap. But, you know... Yeah. If you lose, if the only team that's stopping you winning trophies, I mean, you just said Jurgen Klopp has done arguably the best job in the Premier League. He's won one Premier League title. And by the way, I'm not disagreeing with you, but the reason why he hasn't won anymore is because of City. If City are the only team stopping you from winning trophies, it's really hard to criticize a manager then.
Yeah, I will not criticize the manager too much if we lose a second cup final to City in a row. Just the only thing I want this time, differently to last year, is I want United to actually lay a glove on them and actually go for it. Now, yesterday, Ten Hag was brave and he went for it. He went for the juggler against Liverpool, didn't play for penalties. I want to see United need to do that in the final against City, if indeed we do make it. Let's have a go. It's shit or bust, you know.
I know they said that in the Cock and Devils podcast, but they did lay a glove on them. Bear in mind, you have to understand that, like I said, they came within a crossbar away from taking that the extra time, right? City are a better team. They hold the ball better. United found us out against Liverpool too. There's only so much you can do with the players you have. Remember where United were at by that final. You know, Martinez was already out, right? They're playing Wout Weghorst because Ten Hag doesn't have a striker. The probability you're going to beat Manchester City without a striker is really small, right? I mean, you need your best players fit. When he had his best players fit at Old Trafford, they beat City, right? But every other time they've played City, they've had multitude of injuries. No, the 6-3 game, you know, was pretty much at the start of his tenure. And I think after that, they won the next 10 or 11. So, you know, I think that we have to be realistic. You know, if United are going into that cup final without a fit left back, right? I mean, I'm sorry, Martinez will be back. He's playing for Argentina, but that's a big ask.
Now, like, we're being really disrespectful to Coventry, but, you know, they've got to understand, you know, that we're massive favourites for that game. But yeah. And Chelsea as well, of course. It would be nice if Chelsea could actually beat City.
In the be record against City.
Yes, they've actually played well against City this season and on a number of occasions. But if we played more or less the same team from yesterday and add in Martinez and potentially Shaw, who could make it for the last game of the season, then that would definitely give United a better chance, you know, of winning the game if he had our strongest 11 for that match. Let's take it one step at a time, though. We need to, you know, qualify for the Champions League, be it fifth place or fourth place.
I also think one thing that will make a bigger difference this time, should United have their first 11 fit, is Onana in a cup final will be better than De Gea in a cup final. Because I think that, you know, you have to understand, I mean, United played City 2 weeks ago, one each that they already had with 10 minutes to go, right? And really should have had a penalty and very easily could have had a free kick and a sending off for Rashford with Kyle Walker before Foden scores the second. But these are big moments. City get a penalty, United, that, again, I've never seen given again all season. Unbelievable penalty. I mean, you cannot tell me that Rodri's is more of a penalty than Garnacho's. I mean, it's absurd. I'm sorry. So, you know, City have been beneficiaries of really, really generous refereeing decisions that go your way. And you need that luck in those games because those are the types of things that tip the balance. What Kyle Walker did to Rashford is exactly the same as what Haaland did to Rodri. Right? Exactly the same difference is they got the pounding. Right? Now, if you need to get that free kick, Kyle Walker gets sent off, City are down to 10 men, it's a whole different game. If Garnacho gets that penalty at 1-8, it's a whole different game. You know, Ten Hag talked about the same, you know, away to Arsenal. Haaland should have had a penalty. You know, I mean, they really haven't had a lot of luck with those decisions.
Well, you know, favourable decisions for Manchester City are not exclusive to Manchester derbies. As any football fan of the other 19 teams will tell you, I mean, I always go back to that Rodri handball at Goodison Park. How the fuck is that not a penalty? It really is beyond me. And I think they won the league by just a point, City, in that particular season. So it was massive. I know the alternative would have been Liverpool winning the league, so I'm not going to complain about it too much. So Scott McTominay again with another big goal for Manchester United. It must be near close to a couple double figures now. It was noticeable that when Casemiro pulled out of the game quite late in the day, that he selected McTominay over Amrabat, and I expected him to do that. You know, it was he's done it before. He's obviously, Amrabat didn't even feature in the game at all, and United made five subs, so he's clearly just lost all faith in him, and I'm not surprised. But McTominay keeps coming up trumps. Not the greatest technical player in the world, but he really does offer goals. And if United decide to sell him this summer, they'll get really good money for him. Obviously, with the FFP constraints, United might consider selling players like McTominay because it'll be pure profit. But he's doing his goal scoring exploits this season are just off the charts, aren't they?
It's going to be very hard to find a player like McTominay that United can replace him with that will be that effective, that will get you goals. People keep focusing on what McTominay isn't and trying to defend him by what he isn't. But what he is, you know, first of all, scores again against Liverpool. His goal, his pass for Rashford was brilliant. You know, I remember him scoring at home in the derby against City right before COVID. You know, he's a guy that must have been worth nine points he's been worth United this season. You know, the two goals against Brentford. He's chipped in with some really, really important goals. Could have been sold in the summer. Didn't moan, didn't complain, got his head down, kept playing. You hear Solskjaer, you wax lyrical about him. Mourinho loved him. I think there's something to be said for that, you know, because they understand that these are players that give you everything. These are players that will play through the pain barrier for you. These are players that that are really important in a squad. Not everybody can be Xavi in a squad. You know, you have to have players that give you something different. McTominay gives United height. If you look at that corner in the last minute, who's the player that heads it out?
McTominay.
So McTominay heads that ball out from a corner because he gives you height on set pieces. If he doesn't head that ball out, Virgil van Dijk's sitting behind him. So McTominay gets the first head on the ball when United break. And take a look where McTominay is when United score. He's high up a pitch, right? This is the last minute of extra time. So, you know, these are not easy players to replace. And I don't think Ten Hag will want to sell them. I think United will find enough money this summer to do what they want to do without having to sell the likes of McTominay. I think that there'll be a number of players will leave. And I think that if you look at their financials that just got released, they have room. So they're already being active, they're already moving on targets, they're not waiting.
Yeah, it would almost, like, I've never been his biggest fan, but it'd almost be sad to see him go now after the season that he's had. So, you know, I wouldn't complain if he stayed at this point. Yeah,
I was also sure if McTominay's assists and goals this season were the top midfielders in the Premier League.
Yeah.
If Scott McTominay was called Edinho or something, we'd have a whole different evaluation on him. No, I'm serious. This is true. No, I mean, how many midfielders have United had over the years that are scoring goals with that regularity? I mean, not many. You know, yeah. Creating goals, I mean, the hardest thing to do in football is to score goals. You want to criticize someone that scored a bunch of goals? Okay. You know, criticize, but praising players that almost never score because they've got some fancy flicks. You know, there's a reason why freestylers are not footballers. Because it's all about how effective you can execute on a football pitch and how you can do it under pressure. Scott McTominay would be a hard player to replace.
Yeah, you know, I think United's resolve will be tested because this summer, given the season that he's had, I would say, you know, 14 teams in the Premier League would love to have him. And they could be even.
You can forget about the 30 million price tag.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Not a £30 million player, sorry, boys.
There could be a £50 million offer on the table this summer from someone. I won't be surprised.
I think transfer fees are going to come down quite a bit because of FFP, PSR. I think you're going to see, I don't think you'll ever see the Coutinho, Mbappe, you know, Neymar type fees ever again. So you're going to see a reappraisal of footballers. Because it's just simply impossible to do anymore. I think eventually PSR, FFP will get challenged and they'll relax it a bit. But you saw it in January. You know, clubs are genuinely concerned about it now because they see that it has teeth, that, you know, clubs are getting docked points and most Premier Leagues teams are not compliant. So you're really restricted how Newcastle go about their business.
Yeah, definitely. That January window was a complete non-event due to the FFP constraints or whatever the Premier League call it. What's the abbreviation for the Premier
League? PSR, Profit Sustainability.
PSR. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if the current rules remain in place, you know, transfer windows are going to be very boring now. You know,
it's going to be different. And look, this needs to happen, right? Football has a real competitive balance problem. And there has to be some leveling of the playing field for clubs all across the world. I mean, Serie A is getting badly left behind. You know, I mean, the money you get in Serie A, the bottom team in the Premier League gets more than the team that wins Serie A. This is not sustainable. Competitive balance is integral to the legitimacy of competitions. You know, I don't want to see a European Champions League dominated by Real Madrid and a few English teams. I want to see strong Serie A teams. I want to see, you know, strong teams in France. You know, I want to see strong teams in Portugal. I want to see competitive balance. And so football has to do something about this.
Yeah, 100%. Another thing about yesterday that some people might not have noticed was that for the Rashford goal, which McTominay set up, I think Ahmad won the ball off Nunes, which was... Ahmad was, like, the goal obviously is what people would talk about the most, but his overall performance was excellent as well. I think he even made like a crucial last ditch tackle when Liverpool were attacking as well. Yeah, I think Dalot obviously made it.
If you're not playing, that's how you end up playing. We don't play by moaning on social media. You don't play by leaking stuff from a dressing room. You don't play, you don't earn your way. I mean, we had this conversation before. You don't earn your way into a team, okay, by doing, you know, nonsense stuff on social media. You earn your way into a team by how you train and how you play. That's it. So when you go onto a field, just like Anthony, and you make a difference and you give 100%, then you get rewarded. You cannot earn your way into a team by doing what the likes of Jadon Sancho did, by releasing statements on social media. So, you know, the kid didn't go to the African Cup of Nations. He stayed. Ten Hag told him not to go on loan, and he's been patient. And you get a chance, you take it. This is, you know, Manchester United, you don't get multiple chances. You have to take your chances when they come.
Yeah, I'll say one thing. Pellestri would not have scored that goal at the end. I do think Ahmad is a better player than him. Although Pellestri, he's done well at Granada. He got a goal and assist against Barcelona, which is not that we sniffed at. But I think Ahmad has a wee bit more quality than him and has a chance of, you know, getting into United's first team. And I hope this is the beginning of his United career. You know, there's been, you know, a few players when they have a young players, they have their moment, you know, and then it's the start of a long career at United. And then other players, you know, like Rooney, for example, the hat-trick on his debut, that was just the beginning. You know, but then Makeda, for example, that was a bit of a false dawn, him scoring the winner against Aston Villa. We probably all thought at the time that he was going to be a superstar for Manchester United, because I think he got a winner against Sunderland the week after as well. And we thought,
okay, the thing is that to make it at United is really hard. And so a lot of reasons why kids fail has nothing to do with ability. It has to do with what's going on in their life outside of that. And when you go from complete anonymity to notoriety, a lot of kids find that really difficult. Try to deal with all of a sudden the attention, all of a sudden, you know, everyone wanting to know what your life is like, who your family is. And that's the part you don't know. That's the point. How is a young kid going to take and handle the pressure that comes with success? Because it's really, ability gets you to that level. I mean, you don't play for United unless you have exceptional ability. So many layers that you have to get through and perform exceptionally well consistently before you get to play for United's first team. Same for pretty much any Premier League team. There's a million Adele Taarabs, and there's a million Gary Nevilles. Average players who have a 15-year career at the top, who, because they're able to stay consistent, they can live a certain way, you know, they have a certain personality, characteristics, are surrounded by the right people. But Gary Neville was also born and raised in Bury, right by Manchester. You know, Makeda's a young Italian kid. You know, these kids come from abroad that deal with a whole different set of variables. It's really difficult. And so usually what happens next in a young player's career is all about the mental side.
Yeah, absolutely. And the great thing about Kobe Manu is that he seems like a very grounded lad. You know, he's very shy and unassuming, and I think that will help him. You know, some footballers, you know, football is almost secondary to them. Their lifestyle kind of takes over a wee bit, and then their career kind of peters out.
Well, it all depends on your personality. It depends on so many different things. It depends on the people you have around you. If you happen to be a good-looking kid, then all of a sudden, you know, there's cash being thrown at you. You know, there's, you know, sponsorships. It's very difficult to say no to that, especially when you're surrounded by an entourage. You know, so it's hard to keep kids focused. You know, United have protected players in the past from this. You know, they've had to protect Giggs from this when he was young. Rooney, Ronaldo, all that, because inevitably, you know, that when you get a bit older, when you're with 22, 23, where you're a bit more used to it, and it doesn't mean the same, then you can handle it a bit better, plus you're more mature. You know, you're going to have to do this with Garnacho, you know, so it's, you have to remember, these are young players. I mean, Lee Sharp, Ryan Giggs notoriously partied, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they're young kids with an exceptional ability at one thing, but in every other aspect of their life, they're just normal kids.
Well, the good thing about Garnacho is that he settled down already. He already has a partner and a kid. And Fergie would very much encourage that sort of thing. He liked his player to settle down early.
Yeah, it doesn't mean much for footballers these days, but yeah.
Yeah, and when you mentioned entourages there, and you know, players surrounded by yes men or people that, you know, are bad influences on them, I immediately just think of Rashford and his clubbing in Belfast for two nights in a row.
Yeah, but I want to push back on that, mate, because Marcus is not surrounded by bad people. I mean, he's a normal human being. He's a good lad, you know, and yeah, he went out, he shouldn't have done that. But, you know, he's not out doing what Thomas Partey did. He's not out doing what Marcus Alonso did. Right, you're not out doing what loads of other players have done. So we went out for a drink. He shouldn't have done it. I agree, but exaggerated. Like, so much exaggeration over him.
Yeah, but I think he's been disciplined by Ten Hag three times now. And this season, now yesterday was completely different, and in recent games it's been completely different. But this season, his commitment and his attitude on the pitch has been called into question.
How many times was George Best disciplined?
I wasn't around at the time, so
he was disciplined for dragging. Brian Robson. Wait, I mean, this is to me like, okay, in football, in any walk of life, you know, when you and I go to work, we have a little bit more leverage for our people show up late to work. That happens, right? Premier League footballers should not be doing that. They should be disciplined, but there still has to be a little bit of leverage to be human, because, you know, take a look at Dani Alves. Take a look at what so many of these players are up to. Right? Okay. It's unbelievable, because they're sitting there with all this money. They've got females hanging off them everywhere. Right? Yeah. They're bored. And they're not doing... I mean, Marcus Rashford going out for a drink at 26. What 26-year-old would think that's defines me as a serious problem? Nobody. So, you know, I'm not saying it should happen. Like, he made a mistake. That doesn't concern me. You know, Rio Ferdinand. Take a look at what the likes of Rio Ferdinand was up to behind his wife's back when she had cancer. Right? About why, now this is a lot of group in England, about why he missed drug screen.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sorry, mate. Like, I mean, we're going to. But here's the thing about Marcus Rashford.
When Marcus, you and James Rashford, love him, don't you? You and James will not have any criticism of Rashford whatsoever.
No. I'll hold him accountable like everybody else. But here's the reality, because there's certain things that I know that you're not, information you're not aware of. When Marcus did the whole food drive thing, he embarrassed the government big time. Okay. Now, this also impacted Mason Greenwood. Because when Mason Greenwood was being investigated, the British Home Office told the GMP to make the charges stick, which you can bet your balls was in retaliation for Marcus Rashford. There's been people inside the club leaking stories about Marcus Rashford to certain media outlets that aren't true. There's been people inside the club trying to force him out because of what you were talking about earlier with FFP, you know, they want to cash in on him. He's a human being like everybody else. He has natural emotional ups and downs. Single-handedly, pretty much he got United in the Champions League last season. His role has changed a little bit this season. No, we're going to do this, okay? Because this needs to be, there needs to be context to some of the criticism. So this is a kid that has never been arrested, used this platform to make a material difference in human beings' lives. A kid that, by the way, Everton fans, Liverpool fans clapped and cheered for. How many United players get something like that? A kid that, for the most part of his time at United, has been an impeccable representative of the football club. No allegations, no violence, no arrests, no fucking nothing. So people want to hang him out the drive or going out for a drink? Are you insane? I mean, are you telling me what player in any era of football has, maybe there's one or two, mean, what goes on inside those dressing rooms, you have no idea. Cocaine is rife in those dressing rooms. All through football. There's a reason why the Premier League don't want to test for it. Right? I mean, Marcus Rashford in comparison to the average footballer is a fucking angel. It's ridiculous.
I actually don't give a toss that much about him missing a game against Newport because he was out at a nightclub. What I actually care about is his attitude on the pitch all season, which has not been good, and that cannot be disputed. He has not been, he's been invisible when the other team has the ball. He's not tracking back, he's not pressing. Like, admittedly, that has improved in recent weeks, but in the first half of the season, he looked like a player who didn't want to be there. And
there's things going on behind the scenes that haven't been talked about. Now, you have to ask yourself this. How many footballers... What did Solskjaer say a couple of weeks ago about Watford? Players start running. Now, how many football players at Man United have been doing this for a decade because of what's going on behind the scenes? I can give you lots of examples of players that have done this because they're so disillusioned by what's... Imagine your employer treating you like this way. You know, when Sancho and Rashford missed those penalties in the Euros, right? They came back to United. Remember what United did with Beckham when he came back? You know, supported him, made statements, you know, made sure that he had the full support of the football club. When Saka went back to Arsenal, right? They welcomed him back, supported him, you know, restatements, really got behind him. Rashford and Sancho, nobody even said hi to him. Nobody said fucking word to either of them when they went back to the football club. Right? You've got a football club internally that never keep a single promise, that repeatedly mislead players. You know, he was misled over this renewal of his contract. You know, this has been a major issue that you needed for a decade of players coming completely disillusioned. Alexis Sanchez wanted to leave after the first week. You know, was Pogba not getting screamed at by United fans for not running? At the end of the season, how many players have faced this allegation at United? Bernard Schmidt, Lukaku. Man, go on and on all day.
Yeah, but I criticize those players as well.
With what's going on internally at the football club.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Whilst that is, you know, a valid argument, you know, there's 75,000 people in the ground. There's millions of people around the world who are paying lots of money to watch Manchester United play and watch Manchester United players do a minimum of give their all on the pitch. And I can excuse maybe one or two games where you're off it and you're not feeling it. But when it's going on for more than half a season, the fans have a right to be pissed off at that, no matter what's going on behind the scenes.
First of all, I wouldn't agree that it was going on for half a season, right? Secondly, I think one of the things that's often overlooked in this is that, you know, listen to Jadon Sancho about why he's playing well for Dortmund because of Ian Maatsen, right? Left back and behind him, okay? Remember Memphis Depay's best form for United happened whenever Luke Shaw was playing well. Marcus Rashford needs a left back so that he's not playing left wing back, right? So that he actually has a left back in behind him that can overlap, that he can play off. So hasn't had that for 3/4 of the season. He hasn't had a fucking left back. And you need that. So when your confidence goes and you've got 75,000 people on your back and you're dealing with stuff off the field, you're dealing with your employer who's treating you like shit, human beings feel that. Some people can brush it off because they're not that emotionally connected to the club and they play for themselves and that's okay. But not everyone can.
Sadly, not everyone's privy to the information that you are, Phil.
Yes,
and sadly,
it's important that there's context because, you know, I think that I'll be critical of Marcus. I'm not saying that it wouldn't have been better for him to have a better attitude. There's certain things I think he could do better. But, you know, remember when Ranić was coming out putting the boot in the United players, one of the reasons why they were so upset is because they weren't telling the whole story. But they weren't telling what was going on behind the scenes about how badly players have been treated. I mean, there's things I can't say on here, but they defy belief. And the decay at that football club of any professional standards defies fucking belief. I mean, what was going on in there was an outrage, an absolute outrage. I mean, they mishandled everything. Look at the way they handled Mason Greenwood. I mean, they mishandled everything. Mason Greenwood doesn't want to go back there. Why? But, I mean, think about how many players have left United. They never want to see the place again. I mean, anyway, all I can tell you is this. When Mourinho said that finishing second was his greatest ever achievement, it makes perfect sense. And Ten Hag finishing third with that football team, given what he was dealing with internally, I mean, how many loan signings has Ten Hag actually made permanent? Why do you think that is? Now, you've got to make Sabitzer permanent. Got to make Weghorst permanent. Got to make Amrabat permanent. He won't. Got to make Reguilon permanent. Got to make Jack Butland permanent. Got to make, any of those. But there's a reason why he doesn't. Because Phil, they're not players he actually wants. The players he has to take.
This is not... Like, we also in the clip of Ross Barkley going past Rashford without Rashford laying a glove on him. That was disgraceful. That's not... What's going on behind the scenes is not an excuse for...
Who went past without laying a glove on him?
Ross Barkley. And Rashford just was at walking pace, letting Barkley go past him. And it was embarrassing. You know, you see the clip shared online.
Marcus Rashford needs to be everything. He needs to be a goal scorer. He needs to be a defender. He needs to be this. He needs to be this. Anthony has the highest rate of dispossessions one of the highest rates in the Premier League. Right?
This is basic stuff. The least I expect is effort. If you're not good enough, you're not good enough. But you have.
Did he not score against Liverpool? What was he over 7 last night at Old Trafford?
Yeah, but
let me tell you this right now. If Marcus Rashford was on the market, what did Guardiola say? He's the one player that would get in City's team. If Marcus Rashford was on the market, there are football clubs, all those top football clubs around the world would love to get their hands on him. Because he is that one player that United have.
Do you really think he's had a great season, Phil? Let's be honest.
No. I think he's had a great season because I think he's capable of so much better. But he had a great season last season. But I would say that there's almost nobody. They've had a great season at United. I mean, mine has emerged recently, you know, but the football club is a dysfunctional mess. Rashford has been there, remember, he's been in that first team since he was 17, right? So, you know, he's been on this treadmill for a lot longer than what some of those younger players have. And eventually, you become completely disillusioned with it. You know, he's a lad that could go anywhere he wants. He's a Manchester boy. He doesn't want to leave. But have United really built a team that would, that would deliver trophies? No. And so, this is it's absolutely unbelievable. This football club has no fit left back. I mean, it just defies belief. And so Marcus Rashford now has to do someone else's job in behind him, also do someone else's job up front. The defense has to sit deep. Because it has no pace. So there's massive gaps between the midfield, the forwards and the defence and how they press. And I talked about this after the second game, about how the forwards press, midfield presses, defence presses. So I'm screaming at the weekends, telling his defence to sit high. They dropped. And you see him going, swinging his hands about. If you were telling Phil Foden that he has to play also as a right back, forwards don't want to defend. They have no, they're not programmed that way. You know, so you get a half-hearted attempt at defending. That happens with pretty much any forward you can think about because they don't want to defend. I mean, that happens at all levels of football. If you coach, you get kids that are forwards asking to defend. They'll give you a token effort. But it's not how their brain is wired. It's not their skill set either.
Well, it's not what I see when I watch Manchester City.
Look at Mo Salah.
Yeah, Mo Salah as well.
Look at that. But it's because they don't want to defend. You can't.
No. Mourinho told Rashford.
Huh?
Phil Foden, Mo Salah, all those players defend. They all give their all for the shirt.
They don't defend. They give you token efforts.
It's not what I'm seeing, Phil. Not what I'm seeing.
Then you didn't watch the match of the weekend. I encourage you to go ahead and watch Mo Salah at the weekend on the right. Okay. United's left. Liam Watson. Okay. Because I can tell you, token effort. Okay. Watch Luis Diaz and how he defends. Token effort. Okay. They press at the front. Okay. Phil Foden doesn't have to come back because he has one of his quickest right backs in the Premier League right behind him in Kyle Walker. So Phil Foden doesn't have to cover for him. So that's how you get the best out of your wingers, by making sure you do what you ask players to do what they're good at. Okay. You're forward. I'm not expecting Victor Lindelof to get down the left hand side and ping balls across like Luke Shaw because he can't do it. He's not a left back.
You see, when the other team are on the attack, look at the effort that Anthony and Garnacho put in to check back. We don't normally see that from Rashford. That's nowhere near it.
Go watch the Fulham game. Okay. United away at Craven Cottage to tell me about Anthony tracking back. Go, what are the keywords I watched? Where he stood and what? Ball in behind. I think it was Forrest away. Yeah.
You can nitpick. You can nitpick.
But that's what you're doing. It's exactly what you're doing. You know, Marcus Rashford's not a fullback. I don't want my fucking right winger. By the only goal scorer in the team at the edge of the box. Take a look at where Bruno Fernandes gives a ball away. Right hand corner of the mid. Twice. He gave it away against Liverpool in the corner. Right? Who was it that Fulham at home? Same thing. Doing exactly what Darwin Nunez did. What did Darwin Nunez give the ball away? And what is Darwin Nunez? I rest my case.
I think you have some valid points, but I think a lot of this is because you like him as a person. And
I do like him as a person, but that's got nothing to do with it. It's got to do with you have them help out. But you understand that forwards, there's the reason why there's an old piece of football vernacular, a forwards tackle.
Yeah.
Who gave the penalty away against Man City?
In which game?
2004, right?
Well, that wasn't a penalty for a start.
But it doesn't matter. This is what happens when you have forwards defending. Because they don't know how to fucking defend.
But you have to put in
and they don't want to defend.
He's not putting in even minimal effort for most of the season.
Okay, but if you look at the ground covered in his games, that's wrong. Okay, so
the measure not deceiving me, and every other fan
they are deceiving you. You're coming to wrong conclusions. You're expecting something that's not his job. He's supposed to help out, but he's not been helping out. Well, hold on a minute. If Liverpool are scoring goals because Marcus Rashford isn't tracking back, I want to know where the fuck my midfield is, and I want to know where the fuck my defence is. Where are they? Their job. If United aren't scoring goals because Harry Maguire isn't scoring goals, because Rafa Varane isn't scoring goals, I'm going to say, where the fuck are my forwards? It's your job. Yes, they can chip in with a few, they can help out. But they're not on the pitch to score goals. They're on the pitch to stop goals scoring.
How many times this season has the Old Trafford crowd groaned at the lack of effort from Rashford? Are they all wrong and you're right then, Phil?
No, this is a different question, right? So when Marcus Rashford was scoring 30-something goals last season, you know how many times he tracked back? Almost fucking zero. Because he didn't need to. Because he had Luke Shaw behind him.
There's times this season where he's been cheered off by the home crowd at Old Trafford because he's been that bad.
I have no doubt, but United fans have done that with plenty of players. Right? That's not always the same. That's not an issue. I understand that there's certain fans have been upset with his body language, which has been poor. But 77,500 people in said that stadium, many of whom are tourists, have no fucking idea what's going on with them. None. And don't know what they're watching. I mean, you hear this shit every week about Ten Hag, who should have done this, should have done this. These people have no fucking clue what they're watching. I mean, how many times have I got to hear Garnacho ain't it, bro? And that's who you're relying on? These fucking idiots.
Well, he doesn't go to Old Trafford, Phil.
This is Mark Goldbridge. This is Mark Goldbridge bullshit. You know, Mark Goldbridge is, you know, one week Marcus Rashford's fucking genius. Next month, he should be kicked out of the... This is what happens with people who don't understand the difference between a bad player and a bad game. Who don't understand what football actually is. They base their opinion always on the last 90 minutes that they just watched. That's it. And those are the people that are emotional. that have no foundation, no basis. So there's no. Okay, if United lose next week, I already know the people that are praising them today will be back that saying Ten Hag should be sacked. I already know. There's certain people whose views are based on evidence, not emotion. Who understand football, who understand, who have in possession of information, which gives you a position that is a little more credible than people who are basing their opinions on the information that they have, which is not as complete. Now, there's people who know more than me, accept that, and they have positions on things that I'm wrong about because I don't have that information. To me, Erik ten Hag wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for Marcus Rashford.
Okay. My objective here is always to offer balance. I don't have.
So how many other wingers are scoring the goals with the regularity that Rashford is? How many other forwards? Thank you.
Last season, no one.
Oh, at all. How many do they got?
He had three goals by Christmas, Phil. Come on.
How many is Rashford still in his top goal scoring front line?
Is he?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure it's Hoyland.
You're wrong. It's Rashford. Anyway, let's move on.
I don't think even Rashford has as many goals as McTominay this
season. Probably in the Premier League.
Right, but I mean,
he's what, he got 7 in his last 9 at Old Trafford.
But really, are you really going to tell me he's had a good season? Because he hasn't.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that singling him out is fucking absurd.
I'm not singling him out.
I mean, Ken, Rasmus Højlund wanted to leave after 2 months, mate. Okay? First international break, his dad was moaning about, no, he doesn't like Manchester, doesn't like the team, doesn't how they set up, how they play, nothing. Right? Kid's a good player, very good talent, was on a really good run recently. I think it's amazing. Right? And I like him. I think Garnacho is unbelievable. Right? I think that, but I don't want to see Manchester United without, but who else would play on the left that would be even more close to Rashford?
Well, we got to say this. The 30-goal season was the exception, not the norm.
No, so bullshit. You can't turn around and negate all the strengths and defend him by his weaknesses. Otherwise, you're not objective. You can't turn around and go, every success you had was an accident, but every failure you had is your fault. Otherwise, you're not objective. That. You have to take all the information. No, you can't.
I didn't say that.
Okay, but then 35 goals that he scored last season is not defining, but his perform, whatever, his perform this season is, then you're exactly doing that.
He had 5 goals the season before. So it's very up and down.
Well, he was playing for a fucking team that was a disgrace.
So everything has to be perfect for him to perform then? Is that what you're saying?
No. Not everything has to be perfect. But if you want to get the best of a professional athlete, you have to have an environment that gets the best of a professional athlete. It's just as simple as that. I mean, this is not Sunday League football where you're going over to Sydenham and saying, go fucking kick a ball. But, mate, this is football at the very highest level. This is why there's a whole department that Ineos are trying to build. So you have to have sports psychologists, you have to have nutrition, you have to have a football club with a goal that, first of all, instills belief in its players that they can accomplish, right? That isn't turning around 7th and 8th going, we're fucking aimless. Wayne Rooney wanted to leave Manchester United for this very fucking problem. Because once you have players that no longer believe that the employer they work for is serious about accomplishing goals, they have no interest. It's not that he's not capable of doing it more. But it's because they no longer believe in what you're asking them to do that you actually want to accomplish that. You know, there's a load of... Take a look at Jack Grealish. What's Jack Grealish's numbers?
No idea.
I mean, I'm sorry. It's bollocks.
So, I didn't think the podcast would go this way. I was hoping...
No, there are certain things that he should be criticized on. He shouldn't have went out in Belfast. Big mistake. He let his manager down. He shouldn't have done it. And he ended up handled it properly. But you have to look at it in context. That does not make him a bad person. You know, I can give you a million examples of scumbags that are playing football right now who are not defined by the things that they do off the pitch.
I didn't say he was a bad person.
How's Anthony doing off the pitch?
I didn't say he was a bad person.
Okay, but when you want to single out that he went out for a drink, it's as if that's defining. It's stupidity.
Oh, no, I don't care. I said I don't care about that. It's just his attitude and body language on the pitch.
Should he be doing? Should he be coming in like a fucking circus clown with painting smiles on his feet?
Putting in minimal effort. If
he's going out on the field and still, you know, his top goal scorer, putting in zero effort, what was that say?
See, yesterday he missed about three chances before he scored. I don't mind that. It's when players don't even try. That's what really.
Look at his record against Van Dijk. Take a look at his record against the top six.
Yes, I'm aware of all this.
Compare that to any top goal scorer.
I do want to mention that Liverpool fans like to say that Torres owned Vidic and he only scored three goals when he was playing against Vidic in all those games. Rashford has scored seven against Van Dijk.
The supposed best defender in the world.
Yeah, that brings me on to another point. So the best team that's ever been seen in sport, with the best defender that's ever played the game of football, and yet Anthony scored with his right foot against this amazing team. That was quite a sight to behold as well, wasn't it, Phil? Anthony scoring with his right foot. Who would have guessed?
This is hyperbole. How can you turn around and say that the team that has won the same amount of league titles as Blackburn and Leicester in the last 30-something years deserves that? It's absurd. You know, United finished, you know, above Liverpool three times in the last 6 years. You know, Erik ten Hag, since he's been at United, has a better record than Klopp, has a higher win percentage than Klopp and Arteta that they had at this stage of their careers. In the year and a half, whatever, that ten Hag's been at United, he's won a trophy. Klopp hasn't, right? He's now about to go to another final, right? Erik ten Hag's the only manager outside of Pep Guardiola in England to have won a trophy in the last year and a half. You know, he finished above Jurgen Klopp last season, and you know, so if he wins an FA Cup and finishes in the top three, Liverpool don't win the league or the Champions League, he's had a better season than Klopp again. So this is absurd. You know, I mean, Liverpool are a very, 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 very good team. Exceptional. And I really rate Klopp. But this best ever shit is totally to do. Be called the best ever, you have to do things that no one else has done in history. And Liverpool have never got close to that.
You're right. But if it wasn't for the financially doped Manchester City, Liverpool would have four more league titles.
Yeah, well, so would United would have a couple themselves.
Yeah.
United would have two more themselves. No, so United would have, you know, another FA Cup last season. You know, they lost to City in a couple of semi-finals. They finished 22nd behind City. So,
I mean,
Liverpool
got 98 points and didn't win the league title. That is just truly unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the best ever shit really, really just is laughable. But Liverpool fans just get far too carried away with their own team.
Oh, every fan base does that. No,
and they were brought crashing back down to earth. I'll tell you something that I noticed. They only sing when they're winning.
Football's completely sanitized. You know, football swapped its audience. You know, now they want these theatres, stadiums, you know, comfy seats and all that. They swapped atmosphere for Old Trafford's dead all the time. You know, that's football.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm saying at all. United fans were singing throughout the game. With the Liverpool away section, of which there was 9,000 opposite us, they only sang when Liverpool were winning and scoring. Whenever things weren't going the way, they're completely silent. Like, you see, between Anthony's goal and Liverpool making it 3-2, the away section just stood still and didn't sing a single song in that period of time. So, and even United fans were chanting, your support is shit. And people talk about this great on-field atmosphere. No, it's not. It's not that great at all. I mean, it's this media myth that Anfield is like one of the loudest stadiums in the world.
Yeah, there is no football ground in England anymore that has a good atmosphere. That's all left in South America, you know, Tunisia, like where Andy and stuff, football, where football is not a brand, where you can actually have some freedom to celebrate with a steward kicking you out, where they still retain a connection to the fans, where they aren't trying to swap them for customers, for megastore customers who are there with their phones to take pictures. And, you know, this
the atmosphere was brilliant at the weekend, I have to say.
Yeah, but I mean, but you ask people that go regularly to Old Trafford, they'll tell you that's the first time they've heard that in years.
You occasionally get
maybe Barcelona last season, but, you know, it's a rare occasion then.
When you need to play at home to Brentford or Fulham or Wolves, I'm sure it's not the same.
Same with Arsenal, same City, same, you know, they all have this, which is a library. You know, it's just a consequence of where football is at now. And you want to sanitize it.
Would you prefer like Turkey, where the fans fight with the opposition players?
No, I think you can have a Boca Juniors, River Plate type atmosphere. But the problem with that is that you get all these do-gooders coming out and saying that, you know, it's intimidatory, you know, it's, you know, that we just stamp us out. And, you know, I don't agree with the legacy chant or the tragedy chant. No, I think that's disgraceful. I just don't understand why that's necessary. I don't want to see that. But the problem is that the authorities do everything they can to stamp out atmosphere, you know, and so it's only recently now that have got real standing back, where they can get some atmosphere back in stadiums, where people who actually want. I mean, I've been at Old Trafford where I've heard people tell me to stop singing.
I would tell them where to go.
Listen to the Talking Devils podcast and listen to Laurie. Then when he was singing the UNITED song, someone turned around and told him to be quiet and stop the button.
Yeah, I'm
sorry. So, you know, anyway. But, mate, I'm going to have to split because I got to split out of here. As always, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, Phil. Great to have you on. And superb to go into the international break with a 4-3 victory over Liverpool and taking us into the FA Cup semi-final. So I'll let you drop out and I'll go through the player ratings then at the end.
Thank you, mate. Always a pleasure. Take it easy, brother. Right. See you later, mate. Take care.
Right. See you later. So my player ratings for the game. Andre Onana conceded 3 goals, but none of them are really his fault, and I thought he was decent. So I'll say 6. Dalot was a superb game at right back. 7. Lindelof had to play a variety of positions until he came off at half time and extra time. Nearly scored with his left foot. I'd say 6 for Lindelof. Varane a 6. Wan-Bissaka did well on Mo Salah for the most part. You know, it was pointed out that he made 1 or 2 mistakes that led to the goals. 6 for Wan-Bissaka. Scott McTominay, goal and assist. Unbelievable season he's having in front of goal. McTominay, 7.5. Kobe Manu, best player on the pitch, was unfortunate to be subbed. Some of his skill on the ball is just out of this world. 9 out of 10 for Minu. Marcus Rashford scoring an extra time after that miss at the end of normal time. We thought that was the chance to win it, and we'd lost the opportunity there, but thankfully he got another chance and he buried it. So Rashford, a 6 out of 10. Garnacho, absolutely superb on the day. Got the assist for the winning goal, of course, and was just causing havoc. I think, of course, he had the initial effort on goal that led to McTominay scoring the rebound as well. So Garnacho went 8 out of 10. Hoyland, probably not his best day, just back from injury. It'd be a 5 out of 10 for him. On substitutes, of which there were many, Maguire, was excellent when he came on. 7 from Maguire. Likewise with Eriksen. Some lovely balls over the top. 7 for Eriksen. Mason Mount only got 15 minutes or so. He worked hard, obviously, but didn't really notice him much in terms of, you know, going forward. I can't really give him a rating on 15 minutes, really. And Anthony, yeah, scoring with his right foot, unbelievable. There's a collector's item. If Anthony is 7 out of 10, Nam Diallo, all round superb performance. He came on, as I said, not just the goal, winning the ball off Nunez, the last-ditch tackle that he made. Yeah, 9 out of 10 for Diallo as well, and he got the official man of the match. Eric Ten Hag, 4-3 victory over Liverpool. I haven't said it much this season, but an 8 out of 10 for our Ten Hag. So thanks, everybody, for listening and watching our podcast on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify, or wherever you tune in. And please, if you're watching on YouTube, smash a like on the video, subscribe to the podcast, and get some of your comments in, and I will reply to as many of those as possible. So I'll see you after the international break, everybody.